Guess what, guys? We're back, and this is your host, Anthony Mitchell, and we have another special guest in the building, aka the studio with us. But before I introduce my special guest, I'd like to say that wherever you are listening to today's podcast episode from, please do us a great favor, like, share, subscribe, donate, comment, whatever you got to do, but interact with us and let us know how you enjoyed today's episode. But with that said, when I say that I have been surrounded by godly, ambitious men, it didn't stop with our last guest, Dr. Ellison. In the studio with us now, we have one of the most positive men I know, and that is Anthony Blaylock. Talk to us, man.
Hey, and brother, I appreciate you having me on, man. It's just an honor to be on with you, man. And I'm so proud of all the positive things you're doing, man. So just happy to be on board.
Again, I've been at the free throw line shooting some shots before the game, so I'm going to get us started. But one of the legacies of this podcast is you were on from one of the very first episodes. And real quickly, for those of you who had a chance to hear that interview, know that Mr. Blaylock, 6-year NFL vet, has done a lot of phenomenal things since his time in the NFL. But for you, real quickly, I want you to take us back to your time with the NFL and share one of your favorite personal stories.
Oh, wow, man. I have so many, but I guess the one that I shared with you the last time was my Lawrence Taylor one during the game. But I guess I share another Lawrence Taylor one with you. When I was with the Cleveland Browns, and Belichick's first year coaching, and I think that was what, my third year with the Browns, we scrimmaged the Giants for a week. And, you know, you got Carl Banks, you got all the legends that was there, and of course, you know, Lawrence Taylor. So I'm, you know, on the other end, and we're practicing, and I'm watching these guys. And I'm like, man, I can't believe, you know, that's Lawrence Taylor. And I'm actually, you know, playing against Lawrence Taylor. And I remember, you know, how during training camp, you know, we're at this college. And, you know, we're all in study session and it's all serious and everybody's tired. And we're in the defensive meeting. And Coach Belichick's in there, and Coach Saban is on the board going over some plays. And they just, you know, cut the film off from watching the film. And Lawrence Taylor is walking down the hall with some flip-flops on, and he comes in our door, and he looks up at everybody. And it's maybe about 80 guys in the room. He walks over to the board. He looks at the board. Then he looks at the coach. Then he looks at us. He said, man, that ain't going to work. And then he just turns around and walks out. And everybody just fell out in laughter. Just laughed. That was the type of dude he was, man. So that's one of the things that just his presence and just his just, you know, nonchalant, just everything he did, man. It was just unbelievable.
And he was actually a very unbelievable talent on the field as well.
Most definitely. Who,
this is off the cuff. Who would you say was probably one of the best players you remember from your time seeing firsthand?
Ooh, wow. For me, of course, Jerry Rice, but I have to say,
good one.
He was on my own team that was underrated. Webster Slaughter, the receiver Webster Slaughter, that went to San Diego State, all pro wide receiver. You know, he doesn't have the true numbers because we were a running team with Kevin Mack and Ernest Biner. and Metcalf our latter years. But man, when I tell you in practice field, man, that dude could catch anything that was in the radius of him, and he wasn't fast, but he was quick as a cat off of the ball. That's one of the just true athletes. And then we played basketball in the off season, and we were traveling around Ohio playing other teams and playing firemen and teachers and police officers and that such. That guy had a game as well too. I mean, he was just a true athlete all around. So I would say, of course, the incomparable Jerry Rice, and then the other one would be Webster Slaughter.
So I'm going to go rapid fire mode real quickly, and I'm going to keep you on your toes. Again, as every guest knows, I always say I got your question. And if I can put another log into the fire, and I've noticed in most circumstances, you're like the voice of reason, which I've noticed wisdom is also a big ethic with you. Yes. From that position, share with me or share with some of our young people a few pieces of wisdom that you feel is necessary for their life journey.
Oh, wow. That's a great question right there. I would say, Ant, as far as going with your own discernment, because if I look back, as far as when I was growing up, I knew right from wrong, but a lot of times I would talk myself out of stuff that I was supposed to do, that I knew that was right. And so if anything that I can pass on to the youth that's coming up today will be to of course listen to elders, but to go with their instinct. Their instinct is always going to lead you the right way, because most of us, we grew up the right way, whether we're in a two-parent household or a single-parent household, and you know right from wrong, and you know if you're going in the right path, and if you know you're falling for peer pressure. And I was never one that would fall for peer pressure, but I knew right from wrong. And a lot of times, you know, certain things that was pivotal. Because I tell kids today, the decision you make today could have lifetime consequences. And I've seen that many a time on a lot of kids that I've dealt with that took the wrong path. So if anything that I could say, that would be it.
So, Ant, we're going to switch lanes real quickly, but we'll stay in the same car. I'm curious to know, can you take us behind the scenes on What was the mindset switch with you that took you from being an athlete after your career was over to being a mentor to young people, as well as being big in the community? Because I do know you work with several foundations trying to help a lot of the kids around you.
Well, for me, for the way that I worked so hard for my career, and for me to get injured my sixth year in, and for football to be over, I always had that coming from HBCU on how hard I had to work to get there. So I always was trying to prepare myself for it. But as far as just getting back, as far as to be able to expand on that, man. Oh man, it's just so many things I could say about that, bro. But it's just so, as far as from where I come from, and as far as to give back to the kids, I always want to be able to share with them, and that's what I got into, and that's why I started my own nonprofit named after my mom and my stepdad that passed, of Bill and Martha Freeman Outreach. And reaching out to so many kids, because the way I was raised and the way I came up, I wanted to make sure that whatever little knowledge that I had in, that I can spread that from on the field and mainly off the field, so that they can know that they can succeed. Because a lot of times, you know, mainly in our communities, we think that entertainment and athletics is the only way out. And that's what we always think. We think, man, that's the only way out, man. I got to be able to play ball. and they put a basketball in your hand or football in your hand or something like that. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to show them that, you know, from some of my experiences and some of the things in the past that I was exposed to, that I was blessed to be exposed to, that it is so many different paths. And I know so many successful people that are not in athletics. So that's what I want to share with them. And that's what I try to make sure that if anybody that's around in my circle, man, that I can give them that type of knowledge, or I can point them in the right direction as far as where they can get that education, and they can meet people that can steer them in the right direction, there's anything that could be different from entertainment and athletics. So that's what I try to do.
I remember one night, just on the heel of what you said, my wife and I, this was several years ago, as we were mentoring some kids, we asked them a question, and it kind of pained me, so I it's going to tie into what you said, but we asked them, like, if you needed somebody to write a letter recommendation for you, do you have anybody of influence? Or if you, for example, do you have anybody in your circle that has a lifestyle that you'd want to reach for? And when we're saying lifestyle, you know, of course, we're talking integrity, but we're also talking financial setup. Do you know anybody who's just not struggling? And the kids sat there for a minute.
Wow.
And there was no response. And I'm like, y'all don't know one person from your community? And I think that kind of representation is important, because when kids, if it's just one person, can see somebody that is successful on some front, they've got, even if it's just, hey, this person has an ambition, you see them every day picking up cans or collecting pallets, or you know they've started up several various ventures. It is important to see, did you have a mentor or several mentors or somebody that impacted you in that area that even while you were playing, it always stood foremost, like, man, this is a good model for me to follow? Did you have that sense of mentorship?
Oh, yes. And I share that story, and you've heard it a few times, I'm sure. One of the main ones, I have several mentors, but one of my main mentors was when I couldn't play ball anymore, was a guy named Dr. Isaac Willis. And Dr. Willis is here in Atlanta, and he started Heritage Commercial Bank in the 70s. And Doc took several companies public. And then he has a company, all the video streaming, and mainly what we're doing now with this podcast was formed from Dr. Isaac Willis. Dr. Isaac Willis had a company called Interview. Our symbol on the NASDAQ was ITVU. The only competitor when he went public was a company called Real Networks. Their symbol was RNWK.
Mm.
And Doc, kind of just fast forward what he's done. Doc sold that company in the 90s to a company called Akamai Technology. Their symbol was AKAM. And he sold it for $2.8 billion. And I tell everybody his story. And Doc was never, his face was never on anything. He stayed behind the scenes on everything. And he was a guy that, you know, if you just talk to him, you know, he was real nonchalant, straight to the point. He took me in a lot of board meetings and just let me sit by his side. And I learned a lot from him. I learned a lot from a lot of other guys. But Doc was a person that I learned some of my business acumen from him. So I would say he was a strong mentor for me.
All right. So let me ask a stupid question. How old were you when you got drafted in the NFL?
Oh, man, how old was I? I think, what was I? 21, something like that.
21. Yeah. How old were you when you first started playing?
Ooh, I started playing when I was 8 years old, brother. Organized.
So for about 13 years, it took you preparation to get to the NFL. 6 years it was over. So basically about the first 20 years of your life was dedicated to football. And then you just mentioned you had a career ending injury. So I am curious, can you kind of take us behind the scenes of what got you into real estate after your NFL career was over?
Well, what got me into real estate, when I was in middle school and junior high, I had one of my best friends that lived in my neighborhood, David Chavis. He had a cousin, Connie, and her dad did construction. And he did construction all around Raleigh, North Carolina. And then I knew a couple of small real estate brokerage that were black owned, and I would watch them. And I went to their house and I was amazed. You know, back then everybody had like a little ranch shotgun type house, mm-hmm. like 1300 square feet, something like that. And he had this immaculate house with probably what, about 10 acres. And I was just amazed that this guy built this with his hands. And so from there, I started just like, oh man, I need to get in the real, I can do this. I like what he does. And I just took a passion in that. And everybody, my partner would joke with me, but I would go out and buy instead of comic books, I would buy like design build architecture books. And I did that all through high school. And so once I knew I was gonna play pro ball, and that dream was gonna come true, I already knew what I was gonna invest in. My first 4 years, and before I purchased the car or anything, besides me purchasing my pet that I have, my bird that I have, I purchased real estate. My first 4 years in the league, I was buying, I did probably about 5-6 houses a year. And then I had some guys talk me into getting on the financial end. And it just kind of springboarded from there, man. So I went from just investing, buying houses. And what I was doing in the 80s is what you see on TV now as far as they consider flipping. What I considered flipping back then was I was buying them from the banks, from the REO, but I knew people didn't have down payments. So I was basically paying the people's down payments, giving them a little equity in the house. We would fix up the house, and we had those houses already sold. So that was my first taste into it. And then that's when I kind of went from doing that for about 4 or 5 years to purchasing more houses, to doing the apartment complexes, the triple net, to basically construction. So that's how I got into the bug with it, man. So that's kind of how I parlayed, you know, from playing ball. I was already doing it while I was playing in the league. So that's kind of how I transitioned.
So it's funny to me how it's almost like you had a backup plan before you knew to have a backup plan. I guess I'm going to be kind of greedy with this next question, but it's in line with what I just asked. So my wife and I have been very interested in getting involved with real estate, but mainly flipping homes, because by trade, I am a carpenter. Did it in high school, took building trades, did various things with it through college, took various courses to get my hands acclimated. And I worked with a lot of people, as you did, in the neighborhood. So now that this is kind of becoming popular also on TV, I mean, we watch all the flipping shows on HGTV. Can you give us, from your perspective, from your experience, your time in the game, can you give us three of the most important tips for young men and women who want to dip their foot in the real estate market, mainly flipping homes and apartments and those commercial buildings?
Well, I would say now, Ant, it's so much information out there that you really can get a head start, but really is fact checking what people are saying. And by that I mean a lot of stuff that they're saying that they portray on TV is not true. I give you a prime example on how people market stuff. Like a lot of times you see seminars where people say, come for my first two free courses and I'm gonna show you how I made $30 million and in 4 years, and this is how I did it with no money. And once you get there, and I've had so many people call me and I have to talk them through something, and they get there, then they say, well, I only had to pay $600 for a course, and then we're going to partner with him, and then we're going to do this. And then I know another person, oh, I paid $10,000 to partner with him to get that information, and we're going to do this, and we're going to find a home together. And they're basically giving you the basic information. And all of that stuff that they're giving you is public knowledge. But see, you got to be around someone that has done it, because what they've done with me before, Ant, when I was younger and I had X amount of properties, I had a person that was doing one of those types of deals to approach me and to say, hey, you know, we'll pay you this amount of money if you say that you did these houses with us, through us. You see what I'm saying? So it's a lot of scrupulous people, and they make their money from traveling around doing these seminars. And they maybe, you know, they got two or three houses they've done. So I guess the advice that I would give is to make sure that whoever you deal with, because all that information that they're telling you, I'm telling you, is if you're computer savvy, you can pull all that information up and you can see it for yourself. And rather than paying this person. Now, don't get me wrong, it's certain people that you can pay and you can get some knowledge from. I'm not denouncing that. But a lot of it is, it's all about them on how many people that they can get in particular seminars. So that's the advice that I give, because I can't tell you the number of people, friends that I know, that call me afterwards and like, okay, I'm sorry, but I should have asked you this, but this guy said this and he came in town and da 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 da, and they done spent all this money and it was a waste of money.
And that's the unfortunate part about how a lot of these schemes work. A lot of people think that just because somebody said it, it must be true.
Exactly.
But I wanted to ask you that because I do know, especially for kids, we have to give them like reputable careers that they can go after. As you're saying, I noticed in our community, it does feel like the athletics reign supreme. Like if a kid is drafted in the NFL or the NBA, we'll have a block party for that kid. But if a kid passes their bar exam, we won't even give them a different look. But I do want kids to realize, regardless of your career path, as long as you are having something that you can be proud about, amen, then we're behind you. But I do want to segue a little bit, because as a business owner, I do want to know, have you ever had like any moments or any challenges or anything that has happened that has helped you to see how important it is that what you do, how important it is?
Oh, most definitely. I can acknowledge now, and I can tell you my age on how far back with this real estate thing. I remember back in the day, in the 80s, when we had each city is different. Like the city of Atlanta, they have foreclosure auctions in Fulton County, like every first, I think it's the first Tuesday of the month. And then in Gwinnett, it's like, I think that was back then, it was like every Wednesday. So we had to go and find these properties with an old-fashioned map. It's no GPS, no nothing, just an old-fashioned map. And then go and pull up the financial records to make sure it wasn't any liens. And then, I mean, it's like a 4 or 5 step process. And then I would hire people to go to each courthouse step. And that's how I did it. So now, like a person like yourself, Aunt, that see, I do not have no handyman skills. I know the basics. And so a person like yourself that can do things with his hand, has the knowledge, it, man, the sky's the limit on I'm going back to your old question on what you can put your hands on and what you can still continue to do, because you can have people working for you and still do that. But it's so many things that I've learned along the way to where things are at now, that, you know, you can pull up stuff. I mean, you can go, of course, you can put anything on your phone. You can go right to the address. I mean, it's like a microwave now. It's just, you could just instantly just do stuff and pull up things. Google Maps, you can just see it from your couch. Whereas we had to just go drive. I had to go drive, if it made the numbers made sense, 20, 30 minutes from here. And then had to put set up the course of a day of just looking at properties and taking pictures. So, I mean, those are some of them old school, hard fought, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstrap stuff that I had to go through back in the days, man, compared to now where it's night and day, bro.
And I appreciate you for that, because I'm a little younger, but I'm caught in the crosswinds of having to use almanacs and not even GPSs, but, you know, McNally maps and those sorts of things to get places, to now we have GPSs. So we've had the best of both worlds. But with that said, and again, I thank you for your time and the wisdom that you shared today. But typically, I like to end every interview on a high note. And that high note comes in the form of this last question. So drum roll, please, everybody. But if we were to finally create a time machine and we could send you back in time to speak to your younger self, what's one piece of advice that you would give you?
Oh, wow. But man, it goes back to what I said. Just believe in yourself, your instinct on what you first believe. Because, like, I talk myself out of a lot of stuff. I talk myself out of a lot of stuff. And you look back on it now, you're like, why would I think like that? Prime example, when I was doing those houses, my first instinct was to buy an apartment complex. My first instinct was to buy an apartment complex. My rookie year, that's how I was thinking. I said, I should buy an apartment complex and just live in one of the units for my first few years in the league, rather than buy a house. That's what I was thinking. But I talked myself out of it. I talked myself out of a lot of things like that. And then, even though I was blessed and I ended up purchasing an apartment complex down the road, think about how much further I would be along if I went with my gut and what the Holy Spirit was telling me, my discernment was telling me to do. So that's what I would tell a younger Anthony Blaylock, just to be patient and trust, you know, what the good man is leading you to be able to do. I talked myself out of a whole lot of things. You know, because I thought I was, oh man, maybe that's thinking too big. You never could think too big. So that's what I would say to a younger Anthony Blair like myself.
But to be fair, I am glad you shared that, because in reality, a lot of us have that same impediment mentally, where mm-hmm. somebody once told me, like, 90% of failure occurs between the 6 inches of your ears. Yeah. And I was like, no, nobody else could ever deal with that. Like, even with me starting a podcast, a lot of people don't know this, but I stutter. So for me to even put myself out here where I'm having to get better as a speaker, it's open opportunities. But sometimes, even kids, sometimes we see our challenges, maybe areas we don't think is we can do, or things that we might not be big enough. We don't see ourselves in this light. Sometimes the things we're trying to hide are the very things God wants to use.
Amen. Wow.
So with that said, and I want to thank you for jumping on this platform. It is always a pleasure. And while you were here in front of me, I got to give you your roses, because you have been supportive to us in more ways than one. And as I was saying, you know, it's just a blessing to be surrounded by godly and ambitious men and people who have believed in you and who have worked with you. And I just wanted to say thank you while I have you right here in front of us, because we need to see more people working together to do good things.
Man, I appreciate all those kind words, brother, but I'm always going to throw it back to you, brother, from day one, man. On the calls we get on Mondays and Tuesday nights and Wednesdays, you've always dropped that knowledge, man. You've always been supportive. You've always done stuff for the kids, man, and with the camp you do every year, man. So I'm really looking forward to eventually getting face to face with you, brother, because you do so many positive things for the community. And then with this podcast that you started now, man, and just, I mean, the sky's the limit, brother. And I just want to make sure that you know how much you appreciate it and how many people that you're able to bless by getting this word out and doing the positive things that you do.
So, hey, this is the End Zone Club. If you were hearing this podcast and you're enjoying today's conversation, I encourage you to like, share, rate, subscribe. Also, don't be afraid to hit the support button at the very top. By giving just a little bit of support, you help us to do what we do in the community and also to spread the word to the four corners of the world. And as always, until next time, be blessed. And this is another episode of the End Zone Club.